Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. Joining me, regular contributors Joan Osaer with The New York Times and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine. The retirement system in this country is in shambles, and it's really failing to provide the kind of financial support that many people need in their old age. The number of workers with a traditional pension continues to dwindle if they're lucky enough to have one at all. Social Security payments rarely cover your expenses, and if you do have a 401k through your employer, well, a significant number of people are not saving enough for retirement. So what is to be done? What are some of the solutions? Joe, you're a few years away from a traditional age when people retire. What is it that you're expecting to do?
I think about it every day. I'm 62, and no, I do not expect to be able to retire. I'm lucky that I have a job that I love and that I can do well into my old age. But I'm a classic example of somebody who, at a particular age, doesn't have enough in his IRA to retire. And I think that story writ large is the story of baby boomers in retirement.
Is this part of the issue that people need to accept the fact that the idea of retiring at 65 is just not something that we can expect, that people will have to work longer and that employers will also have to start looking at the workforce differently and keep people working longer?
Well, one would hope employers would do that. It certainly seems that part of rethinking retirement is rethinking how long you work. And whether you take a full-time or a part-time job as you get older, and whether the retirement age actually does, you stop thinking about 65 being the retirement age, you start thinking about 67, 68, 69. So it just seems to me, as part of a rethinking of retirement, that is going to be a piece of it.
Well, Rana, you were recently in California looking at some of the new programs that they have out there. What did you find?
Well, I went to California because it really exemplifies some of the big, important changes coming down the pike in terms of more people getting jobs from small and mid-sized companies, most of which don't have 401ks or other kinds of formal retirement vehicles, more freelancers, women and minorities who tend to save even less for retirement. But that state has actually taken some action now. They have something called California Secure Choice, which was signed into law by Jerry Brown. It's probably going to go into effect in a year or so. And this would provide a formal savings vehicle for every Californian, whether or not they have it in the private sector, public sector, everybody would have access to some kind of savings vehicle. And that could actually help jumpstart a lot of people's retirement plans.
Is something like that, though, being accepted by the financial industry, is it something that people think this is the way to go, or are they upset that the idea that the government is trying to force people to save?
Well, yes to both things. I mean, the biggest problem in terms of getting this passed has been the financial lobby. A lot of mutual funds, a lot of asset managers don't want competition, and they realize that when you start to get big pooled groups of people, it's going to drive down their costs. This goes to a major problem with retirement in general, is that a lot of people are invested in funds with fees that are too high. Even if you're putting a lot of money away, there are ways that you could be saving more smartly. And by the way, this is something that affects not just boomers, but actually Gen X is the most insecure generation in terms of retirement. And Pew Research shows that for the fourth year running, this is the biggest economic concern of Americans overall.
Are there other places in the world that are trying to find interesting ways of tackling the retirement crisis that we're not doing here in the U.S. that maybe we should do?
Well, certain countries actually get people started earlier, right? So in the UK, there's something called a baby bond. You know, people get a certain amount of money to be put aside for their children when they're born. That's something that the state does. The idea is that there's a social benefit to this. It gets people on the track earlier. And again, research shows that the earlier you save, of course, the more you have. And it also builds savings habits, which are important. There are a lot of behavioral nudges, a lot of low-hanging fruit that we haven't exploited yet in this country.
Right. And behavioral nudges is worth dwelling on for a minute, because one of the things behavioral economists have argued for a long time is that part of the problem with 401ks is that they're opt-in. You have to decide to go into one, and if you don't, you don't. As opposed to opting out, where you're automatically in a plan and you have to consciously make the decision to opt out of it. Opt-outs generally mean that far, far more people are in the plan than not.
Is another option for 401ks to also have automatic stepped increases in how much money you contribute as you make more money?
Yes, that's another idea people are talking about. And they're also people who study this for a living have more or less, many of them have come to the conclusion that you have to, in effect, force people to save. It can't be optional. And that in addition to Social Security, there should be some level of forced savings for retirement that you can't opt out of, that maybe doesn't have the same tax consequences, that you can't withdraw.
Borrow from?
Yeah.
You know, leakage. I mean, that's something that you had talked about in a column, this idea that people can pull money out of their 401ks, and that's a huge problem.
Well, where do things stand from a policy point of view? I mean, if these are smart ways for people to save for retirement, and if people aren't doing it, you want to change people's behavior, where do things stand in terms of making changes to 401ks so there's an opt-out or these stepped increases?
So what you're seeing is at a state level, a lot of states are starting to copy what's happening in California. Illinois has a similar plan that they're trying to push through in the fall. Other states like Massachusetts are studying these plans. So I think that you're going to see this sort of slow but steady movement to more enforced savings. At a national level, unfortunately, this is a really contentious issue. I mean, the MyRA program that Obama introduced is a great idea, but it's very small. Once these accounts reach 15,000, they have to get rolled over into traditional funds, which interestingly speaks to the power of the financial lobby, because $15,000 is pretty much when they get interested.
Right, exactly. Well, I guess is the final thought here when it comes to retirement a bit of this behavioral question that we are just not good at planning for the future, that it's hard for us to envision how much money we'll need or how we'll need to save, or just in general, when something is many years out, it's really hard for us to grasp what to do.
There are several issues here that we're not particularly good at. One is thinking far into the future. Another is just investing. Mm-hmm. For decades, people have said, invest in low-cost index funds. Don't make big bets. Don't get hooked on internet stocks. And yet, people do it over and over and over again. And so one reason they don't have enough money in their accounts is because they didn't put enough to begin with. Another reason, though, is quite often they invested very poorly. And now, you know, it comes back to haunt you.
We need to be saved from ourselves when it comes to retirement sometimes.
Well, we'll be watching all those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org. You can also take this program with you as a podcast, available on iTunes. Joan O'Sara with The New York Times and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine, thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.